Welcome to another Sad Songs podcast. We've got Kenneth.
Hello.
We've got Russell.
Hello.
And we've got Joe today.
Hello.
And Joe is going to be introducing our first song, our song for this podcast, which is by a band called School of Seven Bells, and the song is called Open Your Eyes. It's the third song from the album S7B, or S-V-I-I-B, with Roman numerals in the middle. And Joe's going to take us through why he thinks it's a good example of the sad song.
Okay, thanks. So this is a song that it's one of those songs that grabbed me as soon as I heard it. And I first heard it, pretty much when it came out, which is 2016, I think. And I heard it on the radio, and it's got that, it comes across as a sort of excellent sort of power ballady, somewhere similar to a kind of Robin, sort of a dancey, sort of sad dancey song, a Robin song, or occasionally The Knife had a sort of song, I would say, of a similar sort of vein. But it's off their album, their final album, which is an excellent piece of work. And it's interesting to know the story behind it. But for the record, I love the song, and I thought it was a very good example of a sad song before I got the story behind it. And then when you get the story behind it, it just sort of adds extra weight or extra layers, I think, to that sort of sadness. So the album came out in 2016. School of Seven Bells have, I think, three previous albums. I've done that thing I sometimes do where I got so into this album, I've not even bothered listening to the others yet, which is sort of very bad sort of fan base. But yeah, they were a three-piece, so it was two twin sisters, Alejandra and Claudia, and a chap called Benjamin. And one of the sisters, Claudia, left in 2010. And then it was just the two, Alejandra and Benjamin. And at some point, they were a couple. But then I believe they actually then stopped being a couple. And then in 2013, they were kind of working on this album. He got diagnosed with leukemia, I believe it was. And actually, it set on very quickly, and he died later that year. So I think he was diagnosed in February, died in the December. And they didn't have time to finish this album. and this album came out sort of 3 years later. And what happened was Alejandra sort of went and basically decided to carry on the album and finish it herself. And she said it was sort of like, it ended up being like a love letter to him. So it's got this underlying sadness of the real life, sort of happenings that meant this album came about. And there are a number of songs I could have picked off it. There's one called Confusion, I think it is, which was apparently the last one he wrote the lyrics to or something like that, which is quite a tragic song as well. But the thing that grabs me with this album, and actually this song as well, is it's this kind of, it is sad, but in this sort of joyous way. And like the album, I see it as almost, I sort of picture it in almost like a wake when everyone sort of goes and celebrates the life. It's a little bit like that. So there's always this, there's this sadness under it, but it's quite kind of poppy and it sounds quite upbeat, you know. And that's what grabbed me about this song, was when I first heard it, I remember hearing it on the radio and I didn't really make out the lyrics much, except for the sort of the chorus a little bit. But it grabbed me, and I sort of had that feeling of, I thought it was fantastic melodies. Her voice is, it's her that does all the singing on it, and she's got this slightly ethereal voice, sort of almost too laid back in a weird way, but then it goes into sort of multi-layered and quite huge noises. An interesting one, which I thought Kenneth might have something to say about in a bit, was I found out that they wrote their process for writing songs, and they apparently always stuck to this and found it very important, was that they always started with the lyrics and the words first and the melodies. So they always worked in a sense backwards, because I believe usually or often it's kind of the other way around. You build a song and then the words go on top. Reminds me, when I first started writing songs, I did it that way around, and I remember people thinking that was kind of odd to start that way. And I wonder if that sort of, Kenneth might be able to pick something up from that in the actual sort of structure of the song, I guess. But the song itself then, sorry, I'm sort of rambling here. The song itself, so it's really a story about someone sort of trying to comfort a friend who has been heartbroken, but also trying to sort of push them past it and say, like, they're sort of collapsing inwards a bit with sort of their grief, presumably, and then this friend is sort of saying, you know, you can get past it, and yes, that person was probably wrong and broke your heart, but, you know, get past it. And then the sort of twist is that then they're also saying, you know, you are my love, and that they've been waiting for them. So there's this sort of suggestion that they are also in love with this person, that they're trying to help through the heartbreak, which I quite like it's nothing new, is it? It's quite a sort of story. I think what sort of adds something a little bit new to it is the real life history of this band, and the fact that the two people who were the band were actually a couple and then sort of weren't. And she said after this all happened that he was her sort of soulmate. And, you know, when they met, she felt that they'd known each other for years and all this. And she's sure that they'll meet again. It's all I find it quite sort of heartbreaking, really. But the song itself is almost like a classic ballad style, 80s style ballad of heartbreak, I think, with this kind of spoken wordy kind of verse, which is quite modern pop, I guess. But one thing that I found with this song is nearing the end, it really sort of gets me. There's towards the end, it's sort of her saying, you know, like, come close, and, you know, you are my sorrow, you are my pain, and things like this. And it gets kind of a bit, it's sort of more intense. And then at the very end, it kind of builds and builds. And at the very end, there's this, you come close when you're in pain, do you feel better, babe? And I've always found that bit going into this sort of, then it says, then you go because you're afraid you'll fall in love again. I've always found that actually sort of a little bit overwhelming. It's because you can't help but imagine the you know, the true life story of what she's obviously thinking, or I think at least you can't help but think she's thinking about, because she said the whole album really is about him, is about this person who was in a relationship with the singer and who died tragically of an aggressive illness. So there's a sort of, amongst it being a kind of in some ways cliched ballad, there's a real heartache in there, I think. Yeah, and I've got some other little bits and bobs, but I'll probably come back to it. I'd quite like to sort of open it up and see what you guys think.
Well, thanks, Joe. That's a really great introduction. I've been saving my bit till the end recently because I seem to be saying with every song, oh, I'm not sure I quite get it. Well, I'm going to say the same thing again here, but I'm going to go first anyway. I've got to say first, I do like this song, and I wasn't really that aware of them beforehand, so thanks for pointing this one out. It's the kind of music I'd love to listen to, you know, in the car driving around, and could just kind of be there and pleasant to listen to. In terms of the song itself, I thought that this song is incredibly structurally similar to something that, unbelievably, you mentioned right at the beginning, right, which is Robin.
Mm.
And there's a specific Robin song, Call Your Girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that song. I think it's absolutely amazing.
Just a note, by the way, I listened to that earlier because this set me on it. Listening to these guys set me on this trajectory of heartbroken pop. But anyway, carry on. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I really like about Call Your Girlfriend by Robin is it's what I would call, like, proper fantasy, right? There is no call ever being made in the song Call Your Girlfriend, right? It's Robin imagining, making, you know, being in a position that the girlfriend needs to be called. So it's this kind of hilariously intricate, detailed sort of thing where Robin's positioning herself as this very sort of reasonable person and actually asking for a lot of unreasonable things in it. And it's just kind of quaint because it's this thing that's never going to happen. It's an impossibility. It's a dream. Whereas with this one, I kind of found it's a bit sort of the other side of that. It's a sort of, and, you know, this is a Maya that I don't particularly want to get into, but it's kind of cool girl sort of saying, you know, well, you're going to come back to me eventually, you don't realize it. And there's a certain level of kind of cockiness with that, I thought, that sort of put me off it a little bit, really, when I started listening to the actual content of the song. And I wondered, you know, is this a kind of female version of a kind of Robin Thicke type thing? You know, this sort of, it's it doesn't quite sit well with me, I think, this sort of notion that, you know, well, I've just been waiting and eventually you'll learn and, you know, I'm irresistible and there you go. And for me, that sort of prevented it getting into the zone of the sad song. I mean, you've said a bit about the bibliography and how the biography, I should say, and how it was based on these two people meeting and the sort of story of their time together, but it wasn't really about the death. It was because it was done before that came in. And it's just a very interesting sort of, I don't know, it's a very interesting way of thinking about something you've done with this kind of, you know, there's almost a sort of megalomania in it of like, you know, just I'm great. And for me, that was the thing that prevented me really liking this one and putting it in the sad song category. Don't know what Russ thinks.
Well, maybe similar to what you thought, Stephen, that the song can be interpreted differently outside of the context of Benjamin Curtis's death. I think if you know about that, you can see it as being sort of this kind of this pining song for someone that has passed or is passing. But if you didn't know about that, you can see it about this pining song for someone that is still there, which kind of has a different tone to it, a different kind of like an aching feeling as opposed to a grieving feeling. And I guess that's the point I was trying to make. I mean, how much do we interpret songs based on, the story and based on, you know, a person's passing, for example? I mean, one song that we're going to do shortly is to do with, you know, a definite passing of someone. And I think, you know, there's certain interpretations to be made with regards to that. But this is in hindsight. And I think you can interpret this song completely differently if you've got the hindsight of that knowledge, as opposed to, as you say, quite a saccharine sweet sort of love story that kind of ends up with being like some person almost boastfully, asking the other person, to love them sort of thing. So I just thought it was interesting how you could sort of chop and change between those meanings depending on your knowledge about the story.
Jeff?
Well, I was just going to say in response to that, and I take what both of you are saying, I was going to say, yeah, with regards to how you view it, and obviously it then being influenced by the story, I think my thing is without knowing the story, I don't think I took it quite the way you guys did, but I understand that you did. In terms of, I still thought the end of it was pretty heart-wrenching. This sort of, I don't know, I still thought it was pretty, it seemed pretty kind of honest to me, but I get that you're saying, yeah. I guess what I'm saying is my view of it now is coloured by the story, and I kind of can't help it because, you know, once you know it, don't you? It's like a lot of these songs, sad songs, that often you've got some sort of real life trauma to it or whatever that then you can't help but look at it through. But it was probably not, as I think Steve mentioned, it's probably not actually written with that in mind at all, but was certainly recorded with the reality of that.
I think, you know, there's a moment in, Russ said pine, and I do wonder if it's a pine, or more kind of, to me, the end bit sounds more like the kind of spider in the middle of the web, like thinking or happy that they're going to catch the fly and that they're kind of inevitably going to win. Which
you've got a real cynical edge to it.
Yeah, I suppose it does have a bit of a cynical edge to it, and maybe that's, you know, reveals more about me. What did you think about this one, Ken?
Yeah, well, if I understand Stephen correctly, I was going to say something similar in a way, but for me, I'm slightly on the slightly more sympathetic side of this female character. I mean, there's quite a lot of songs, like, I mean, in my mind, I was thinking of that Bright Eyes song. I think it's called You Will, You Will, You Will. It's all just like this kind of arrogant, you will return to me. And, you know, there's, I think Stephen's kind of saying that song kind of belongs to that category. For me, it was, it had that sort of potential to be, have that kind of sinister, megalomaniac sort of approach. Because, you know, there's a woman here who's really systematically breaking this guy down in a really sort of fast-paced sort of torrent of words. You know, she's going, you know, you've got anger that's turning into spitting on herself. She's had ages to think about exactly what his problems are. And she's presenting to them in this like torrent of words. And it's the kind of thing that, you know,
to quickly put in, that's a really great point, especially when they're both in the band together and he's like there thinking like, oh, I have to make some guitar music now to this sort of, you know, analysis of me and all of my sort of failings.
Yeah, it must be really strange. It struck me as the kind of dressing down that you can't ever really give someone, because the first thing they would do if what she's saying is true, you would just slam the door and bugger off and you would never hear from him again. But there was something really beautifully melodic and hushed and gentle about the voice, which actually made it come in the guise of something sort of much softer for me. And I didn't get that sense of kind of abrasive level of arrogance. I mean, Joe was saying a little bit about the kind of the way that the words just flow so beautifully along. And I think in a way they have to, because it's very much a piece of prose that's being put in, as Joe was saying, it's being put into music or into melody. One thing I really liked about this was the fact that the melody throughout the chorus, while she's giving him this full dressing down, is completely monotonous. By which I mean literally monotonous. There's only one pitch, but you know, it's interesting from all sorts. You know, the timbre is beautiful, the textures, they all change, and it gives you a chance to really focus on the words, which on the one hand makes the words much kind of colder. But at the same time, I think it gave this sort of nice sort of distance to it, as if she wasn't getting emotively involved with the words. She wasn't shouting. She wasn't appealing to him too much. It was quite sort of matter of fact. But the other thing was that this kind of use of a single melodic pitch, it was beautiful. But then when she sang Open Your Eyes and then started to move into the chorus, then she became sort of the full flowering of melody sort of burst out. It became much more melodic, much richer, and it was like she was kind of showing him that there is some kind of life beyond this kind of cocoon that he's living in, and trying to more like entice him out rather than give him this sort of arrogant, you know, I know you're going to come to me sort of feeling. So for me, I mean, I heard the voice as being much more sympathetic, but I can totally see how Stephen, with just perhaps a slightly bit more of a cynical edge than me, sort of capsized into the other side of the fence, I guess. But in short, I love the song. I think it was really good.
Joe, do you want to go?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I was just going to say... yeah, it's funny you sort of saying that. I'd never thought of it like that, and I've got the lyrics in front of me. And now it does feel like one of those things that it's like you say, if someone said that to you, you'd be like, shut up, you know, you're in the middle of a load of grief. You don't want someone saying this to you. But then I think the delivery with it is really beautiful. And I don't probably it's partly the way she sounds actually softens the blow. But also I think it's the fact that she sounds quite desperate as well, and there's a sadness to that, I think, you know. But I think at the very end sort of refrain, I feel like that's all calmed down to a sort of an understanding between them, almost like, you know, do you feel better, babe? It's then a sort of conversation, if you like, but a really sad one. And it's that I think when you also think of it in because obviously this might not be about them, we don't know, do we, but it's that sort of the context of you're thinking of a couple who actually were once something, aren't now, but there's still probably affection there, is what I sort of take a little bit from the end bit, is like there's still a love there, even though this guy's presumably gone off for whatever else. It's a little bit confusing in terms of that. One thing I quite like about it is actually that lyrically it's relatively kind of simple, you know, there's nothing too poetic. It's almost sort of childlike in some ways, and I think that adds a little bit to it, to the sort of sadness of it. I see it more sort of pleading rather than really or more in a positive light, like Ken says. I definitely see it as someone trying to help someone through rather than belittle them and and all the rest.
I'm not sure that it's an attempt to belittle, but I think I think it probably comes from a place of, you know, good intentions. But if you actually then think about, hold on, like what is the text here, then it becomes a bit more revealing. Russ, do you have a last word on this one?
The only thing I was going to say is just how wordy it actually is. It kind of a little bit like distracts from the meaning of it, because it's kind of like this kind of waterfall of words, which kind of like you can't really follow when you're listening to the song unless you're reading the lyrics. It's kind of like almost like a rap song. It just kind of like repeats, like the words are so quick, kind of tumbling out of the mouth. And I don't know whether that was, you know, something that which was kind of a little bit distracting from the meaning of it for me, really, because I could hear the words. I couldn't necessarily understand what they were getting at while I was listening to the words until I looked at the lyric sheet. And, you know, that's something that maybe kind of distracted a little bit from the true meaning on my initial listen until I started sort of examining and reading lyrics and things like that. So that seemed a little bit kind of function over meaning, if you see what I mean. So I don't know whether the kind of the stylism got in front of the actual kind of message that they were trying to communicate in it. So I didn't really get the message as a consequence. I'm not sure.
Ken, do you want to go next, and then Joe can wrap it up?
Yeah, just to quickly add to what Russell was saying, because I think what I was going to say kind of follows on. And returning to one of Joe's points earlier on about the text being, the music being written to the text. I agree with Russell, absolutely. It's very difficult to follow because it's so, what she's saying is so kind of dense, and she just gives one sentence before you have to, you really need to stop and think about that, digest it before you then move on. And of course, the person that she's talking to could never process at that speed. So it's like it's a kind of a compressed time where she knows we're going to have to actually slow this down, look at the lyrics, actually think about it properly. Ironically, you can hear every word that she sings and you can understand it word by word. And that's partly because of this, where she's composed it along with, composed the melody to the words. But I was also thinking about a lot of bands. The most notable for me is the old Manic Street Preachers, but even the Red House Painter Boys that we listened to last week. And quite often they kind of purposely they emphasize unusual syllables of words, or they join sentences together. And it's really difficult to actually pick out what the hell the words are. I mean, the Manic Street Preachers, their songs just really didn't scan poetically. They'd obviously written the melody and were sort of cramming in words so that they would just about fit together. And I always thought, well, if you actually want people to understand what the hell you're saying, why would you do that? And I think it's actually almost the opposite, that they know you'll have to go to the lyrics booklet, which, you know, that band always gave you, and that you would have to study it like it was poetry and really sort of take it apart and really get to know the song. It's almost like putting up a barrier that they entice you into, knowing that you're going to break it down and get to know the song deeper. Perhaps that's what the person he's doing with this message. It's like, yeah, I'm giving you a babble full of words, and I need you to go away and think about them, which I think is even more patronizing now I think about it.
Yeah, I mean, interesting points all around. I would suggest, if you guys ever get time, like listen to the album as a whole piece. It's pretty it's pretty excellent and sort of goes all over the place. But it makes me think maybe there's space for us doing a Robin or a Knife song or something like that down the line.
You know, I was listening to a playlist I'd made in 2010 today, and it had a School of Seven Bells song on it from probably, I don't know, it might have been her first album, not sure.
Yeah.
But it also had a Robin song on it, and I thought immediately, let's do a Robin song.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then the other thing I was going to say, just to finish, because it's, Steve will probably cut this anyway, but this is the third, I think this will be the third one that we're going to listen to, because one of mine coming up as well, where I single-handedly, I actually changed their song ratings on the thing I play, on Deezer. So basically, when I listen to a song more, it jumps up their ratings like that day. So I think I'm the only person still listening to this album in the UK, really. But I would recommend it to everyone. It's a fucking, it's a great album. And it's well worth your time. So, and it is sad. Okay. It is sad. I think we can agree this is a sad song.
Yeah, I agree. It's a sad song.
Yeah, I agree.
No. Well, thanks, Joe, for another contrary podcast. The next song we're going to consider is Prince's Sometimes It Snows in April. And thank you for listening.